नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं धीरं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नस्तपरिषु भद्रिषु नित्यं भगवतः सेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 18, Text Number 1 and 2. Is that it? Okay. So on the board we have verse number 2. We're going to read text number 1 by myself. Shri Shuka Uvacha Yatir Yayati Sam Yatir Yatir Viyati Kriti Sar Ime Nausha Shyasan Indriya Nivadehina. Sukadev Goswami said, O King Parikshit, as the embodied soul has six senses, King Nahusha had six sons, namely Yati, Yayati, Samyati, Ayati, Viyati and Kriti. Rajam Naichad Yati Pitra Datam Taparinatma Vit Yatra Pavishta Purusha Atmanam Navibudyate Rajam. The kingdom, Na'aichat, did not accept. Yati, the eldest son, Yati. Pitra, by his father. Datam, offered. Tat parinamas vit, knowing the result of becoming powerful as a king. Yatra, wherein pravishta, having entered, purusha, such a person, apmanam, self-realization, na, not, avabudyate, will take seriously and understand. Translation and report by Srila Prabhupada. Kawadki. When one enters the post of king or head of the government, one cannot understand the meaning of self-realization. Knowing this, Yati, the eldest son of Nausha, did not accept the power to rule, although it was offered by his father. When one enters the post of a king or head of the government, one cannot understand the meaning of self-realization. Knowing this, Yati, the eldest son of Nausha, did not accept the power to rule, although it was offered by his father. Self-realization is the prime objective of human civilization, and it is regarded seriously by those who are situated in a mode of goodness and have developed the brahminical qualities. Kshatriyas are generally endowed with material qualities conducive to gaining material wealth and enjoying sense gratification. But those who are spiritually advanced are not interested in material opulence. Indeed, they accept only the bare necessities for a life of spiritual advancement in self-realization. It is specifically mentioned here that if one enters political life, especially in the modern day, one loses the chance for human perfection. Nonetheless, one can attain the highest perfection if one hears Srimad Bhagavatam. This hearing is described as Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Maharaj Parikshit was involved in politics, but because at the end of his life he heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadev Goswami, he attained perfection very easily. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore suggested Stani Stita Shruti Gatam Tana Van Manobir Ye Prayaso Jita Jitopi Asitais Trilokyam Bhagavatam 10.14.3. Regardless of whether one is in the mode of passion, ignorance, or goodness, if one regularly hears Srimad Bhagavatam from the self-realized soul, one is freed from the bondage of material involvement. Om Ajnanati Marandasya Gananjana Sarakaya Chaksuran Meditam Gena Tajmai Sri Guru Vedama. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master has opened my eyes at the torchlight of knowledge. I offer him my robes, humble obeisances. Vancha kalpata rubhyascha kripasindubhya evacha paritanam pavanebhyo vaishnavibhyo namo namaha. As part of the morning program, I always like the Bhagavatam class because it comes at the end of the whole program, and the whole program is a little bit exhausting, you know. Mangal Arati, and then Tulsi Puja, and then Japa, and Didi greeting, Guru, everything. But Bhagavatam class is just sit down and just relax and hear some katha, you know. Kind of easy and informative at the same time. So hopefully I'll be able to speak something that you will be able to enjoy. So before I start with directly with the purport, I want to explain something a little bit about the Bhagavatam, because I heard some nice things about the Bhagavatam from a seminar by a devotee called Radhika Raman, who is actually a disciple of Radhanath Swami, and he's the head of the religious department at the University of Utah, United States. So he was giving a seminar, and he was explaining that even the non-devotee scholars, they appreciate Bhagavatam to be the highest Vedic literature. They, after studying Bhagavatam, they understand that this is the topmost, exceedingly above all other Vedic literature. This literature, the Bhagavatam, is the highest. And they have different criteria. They say that there's some words in the Bhagavatam that you won't find anywhere else except in the Bhagavatam. And if you refer to the dictionary and you find a word that was in the Bhagavatam and you look in the dictionary, some of the words that they explain in the dictionary, they will explain it only in reference to the Bhagavatam because it's not used anywhere else. Because in the Bhagavatam, there's topics which is transcendental to mundane life, like the emotion of love of God. The English-speaking people from England or America, they have no idea what love, the emotion of love of God are. And the description of the words, they're not there. So there's some word in the Bhagavatam that do not exist anywhere else. And when they compare the Bhagavatam to other literature, what the Prabhu was saying is that in the Bhagavad Gita, for example, you'll find two kind of rhythm. You know, Dharma Kshetri, Kuru Kshetri, Samavi, that's one rhythm. Then you find Namayati, Briyati, Bhagarachan, a little longer. So there's only like these two. But in the Bhagavatam, you'll find all kind of verses. Sometimes we have a hard time chanting them because, well, what's the melody for this one? You know, like a long one, you become bewildered. So Bhagavatam is a little higher up, a little more powerful delivery, and so on and so forth. In that sense also, there's more varieties of rhythm in the Bhagavatam. Another thing about the Bhagavatam is sometimes one may think, well, the Bhagavatam, how do we know that Bhagavatam wasn't changed spoken 5,000 years ago, and you know, after such a long time, Bhagavad Gita was lost. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that Bhagavad Gita was lost, and he had to repeat it. What about the Bhagavatam? Well, one way we can say also that if the Bhagavatam is lost, it can be rejuvenated by the appearance of pure devotees who are going to chant the mantras of the Bhagavatam properly, and the message will be reawakened. We can say that. But another way also that he was explaining is that the Bhagavatam was heard every day. It's been heard every day for 5,000 years. Because it's just so important and so interesting that both the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam are spoken daily. Whereas other literature, like other Puranas or the Vedas, they're not recited daily. They're recited sometime. But Bhagavatam is so powerful, so interesting, so much at heart of devotional life and devotees that it's always, always there. So, therefore, the consciousness of the Bhagavatam is in me a little bit, but it is in all of you also. So if I deviate today, right now, if I deviate from the Bhagavatam, you'll know right away, and you'll be able to correct me, right? So because the Bhagavatam is ever-present in people's consciousness, it's very hard to deviate, because its correction will be there immediately. Another thing he says is that the Bhagavatam's got over, I don't know if it's 20 or 40 commentaries by different acharyas. Whereas other Vedic literatures, they have only one or two, three or four. So also, I want to make it more personal. I joined because of the Bhagavatam. Because the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam is the Krishna book. And I joined in 1973, and the Krishna book was already printed. And when I was in the material world, I lost my faith because I became influenced by modern education. And although I had faith in the beginning in my youth, I kind of lost it. Became doubtful and agnostic and lost my practices. But some other one day, was on the street in Canada, and I met devotees, and they gave me BTG and Path of Perfection and Beyond Birth and Death, like the original Beyond Birth and Death, that is a skull on the beach, and there's a flower going to the eye of the skull. I don't know if they still print that book. But I was like, wow, what's that? It's worth reading, you know? So, later on, I read the BTGs and I became interested. So I went to the temple in Toronto, and the devotees there, they sold me a Krishna trilogy and a Bhagavad Gita hardbound. And I wanted to buy a softbound, but the devotee said, no, you need a hardbound, it's going to last longer, you know. I said, well, I can buy other books. No, buy a big hardbound. You know, it's easy. I had to pay $10 for it instead of $4 for the softbound. Then about a trilogy, and I started to read Krishna book. Then I started to read about Krishna as six opulence in full. So, full beauty, full knowledge, full renunciation, full fame, full strength. So I said, well, that's got to be God, you know. This is the perfect definition. It's unlimited of all these things. That's actually the definition of God. Then I understood that, actually God exists. You know, I was doubtful, but here he's back again, appearing in a new feature as Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I thought, well, now that I know Krishna is God, and later on I got the Maha Mantra, and I was chanting the Maha Mantra, and I had that feeling that from now on, because I know Krishna is God, and because I have the Maha Mantra, I will always going to be safe. From now on, I'm going to be safe, because now I got this mantra to chant. I had that realization even was just right from the beginning. I said, I got the Maha Mantra, this mantra is going to always be there with me, and it's always going to protect me. So this is the power of the Bhagavatam, although I was fully involved with all the sinful activities because I was born in ignorance. And although I was a really like an uncontrolled animal, I was like diseased and mentally out of it. Still, the Bhagavatam had that impact. Although the Bhagavatam is the highest literature, and it's meant for Paramahansa, meant for liberated soul, not even meant for other people. Only people who are liberated from the modes of nature can understand the purity of the Bhagavatam and the intention of the Bhagavatam and pure devotional service. Still, although I was not a pure devotee, and even though I'm still not a pure devotee today, it had this impact on me because it was spoken by Srila Prabhupada. Was written down by Srila Prabhupada. We have to understand that Prabhupada is an incredible, powerful acharya, that he can give the message of the Bhagavatam and it can have an impact on anybody. Just look at the crowd here. Like in Mayapur, there's like 70 different countries are represented in Mayapur during the Gaur Purnim festival. Devotees from all over the world, Russia, China, doesn't matter which race you be, Africa. Doesn't matter where you came from, Americans, Canadians. Everybody got affected by Prabhupada's books because of Prabhupada's power. So this bring on the next subject matter of that the Bhagavatam is not separable, it's not going to be separated from pure devotees, from Mahabhagavats. They are hearing Bhagavatam all the time, and they are the embodiment of the Bhagavatam themselves. Like, why are we successful with our movement? It's because Prabhupada was the perfect embodiment of what he taught. It's not like he was like a mixed devotee and he was trying his best to represent Bhagavatam. No, he was a pure devotee and he was the full embodiment of all the qualities of a pure devotee, and purity is the strength. So that's why the movement is still expanding, and that's why we're still here, because we have that example about Prabhupada. Sometimes we have difficulties and the Bhagavatam cannot help us, or even the chanting cannot help us, but by remembering Prabhupada we get some help. I remember one time I was Maya a little bit and I couldn't find any solace. So I pick up a Vyasa Pooj book and I look at the picture of Prabhupada. I look at the temple give the offering to Prabhupada, and then at the end there's the names of people who are going to take Brahminical initiation, and then it's the name of Karmi, names of new devotees that they're going to take initiation. But even those names, Bhakti and Mary, Bhakta Joseph, or Dick, or whatever, even his name in the Vyasa Pooj, they have a transcendental nature because they're connected to Prabhupada. So just by looking at pictures of Prabhupada or hearing the song he sings can carry you through. So now we hear that this is the recommendation in the Bhagavatam also, that we must approach a pure devotee. Like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Tadviti Panipratena Pariprasena Sivaya Upadeksha Santite Gyanam Ganita Sakshla Darshana. That he says to Arjuna, okay, you have to approach a pure devotee, inquire from him, self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. And Lord Brahma also told Princess Devahuti, because when Kapila was born, Brahma came down and he had personal conversation with Devahuti and Kardama Muni and also Swayambhuva Manu. So he told Devahuti, your son is an incarnation of Krishna. He came down to give Sankhya Yoga, spiritual philosophy, for self-realization. When he grows up, I recommend you ask him, you approach him and ask him about the path of self-realization. And the teaching of Rishi Badev also, Lord Shiva Dev tells his son, you must approach a Paramahamsa, self-realized soul, and become students, disciple. So, and then also, so the Bhagavatam is the pure devotee must be approached. And but furthermore, a little detail is that the Bhagavatam or the spiritual knowledge, Krishna says when somebody asks Krishna, can you enlighten me in spiritual self-realization? Krishna says, yeah, I'll do that. But what I'm going to speak to you, I already spoke before to other people. Like he told Arjuna, I already spoke Bhagavad Gita to the Sangha. And Kapila Dev, he said to devotees, yes, I'm going to instruct you about the yoga, about the connection between the Supreme Person and the individual soul, and how it frees from all material happiness and distress. But I already spoke that knowledge before. So why does he say that? Because what do we get from this is that Krishna is, the first attribute of Krishna is that he is eternally conscious. Krishna is eternally conscious. He has imperishable consciousness. It has no origin and no end. That's what Krishna is. Krishna is permanent eternal consciousness. Or he has permanent eternal consciousness. And that's why we have consciousness ourselves. Can you imagine if Krishna was not conscious? Like the Buddhists, they try to explain that everything is void. How can they say that? We are here already. How can they say everything is a void? Like Krishna has no consciousness. What kind of philosophy, stupid philosophy is that? So, Krishna is eternal consciousness, imperishable consciousness, but also he has imperishable memory. Our memory is perishable. We cannot remember what we did the day before and what to speak of a year ago. But Krishna remembers everything he said and everything he's going to say later on. So that's why when Krishna's, we're dealing with the same person. Krishna and Bhagavad Gita, Kapila, Rishabhadev, whatever incarnation, it's always the same person. And a new role. Therefore, he's going to speak this. That's why he said, I spoke this philosophy before because I was there a million years ago. And I remember. That's a wonderful nature of Krishna, that is imperishable, his consciousness is imperishable, his memory is imperishable, so on and so forth. So, now, we receive Bhagavatam from the self-realized soul, and the next point is we want to practice it, we want to apply it. So, Bhagavatam must be heard properly, but the symptom of being heard properly is we'll be able to practice it properly, we'll be able to apply it, to derive some tangible result. So, this is more difficult. How I can take instruction of the Bhagavatam that applies to me, that I can actually follow according to my conditioning, according to my material needs and my limits, what can I accept from the Bhagavatam? And if we make a miscalculation, and we read for a time, like for example, we read the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj. Oh, wow, that's great. I'll do the same thing. I'll go to the jungle, and then I'll stand on one leg, and I'll cut my food in half the first day, and the next week after that, I'll stop eating, and a month later, I'll stop drinking, and then after that, I'll stop breathing, and then I'll realize. Just guess they will try it, you know. This is for me. This instruction is just perfect. Well, it may not work. It may not work. Or other instruction. that may be too high. That's why we have to practice Krishna consciousness in the association of devotees, because on our own we become bewildered even reading the Prabhupada's books. We may understand some of it, we may not understand all of it, we may misinterpret what we're reading because we're in the modes and we're motivated and whatever. But with devotees, not always, sometimes even if there's many devotees, all the devotees can be bewildered also. It's possible, it happened before, but better to practice, and by practicing we can come closer to the truth. So, it's explained that in order to go from one stage to the next in devotional life, like Sadhu Sangha, Bhajanakriya, Adoshvara, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajanakriya, Anatta Nivritti, Ruchi, Nista, Ruchi, etc. All these stages, in order to go through them, you cannot go through them without the association of devotees. That's what I heard in Mayapur. And of course, I was giving there. We have to go through them in the association of devotees, because we can get coached. We get coaching. Sometimes we need coaching because our mind is uncontrolled. So in order to help us control our mind, we need a coach. Like athletes have coaches, businessmen has they have coaches. Almost everybody has coaches, because a coach, somebody who stands outside and he looks at you and he knows, the guy thinks he's right, but he's off. But I know I can help him out. So then, and he comes in, hey Prabhu, you know, this, you have to change this, you know. So even giving Bhagavatam class is a little risky, because we're imperfect, and we say, they give an imperfect Bhagavatam class. But it's better to risk being imperfect and get some feedback so we can improve. We get some feedback, we can improve. But if everything you do, you have to be perfect to do it, you're not going to do anything. You're going to sit on the side, not risk anything. So coaching is very good, and we get the coaching from devotees. Sometimes we undergo a spiritual crisis, which is like an identity crisis. There was a course on that at the ILS seminar given by Bhakti Vigyan Swami, and he was explaining that what a spiritual crisis is. Spiritual crisis is when we lose our identity. We have difficulty identifying what is who we really are, and then we have like our material identity is changing and it's painful, and our spiritual identity is not fully developed, so we cannot really identify fully with our swarup in the spiritual world, and then in the material world we're forced to change all the time. Sometimes we're in between, so we undergo a spiritual crisis. Either we don't have the tools to go to the next stage, we don't have the skills, and we don't have the self-confidence is not there, and we fall back, or we remain neutral. And as the whole thing he was explaining, and he was making a, he told a joke, little joke, that there was this guru, ISKCON guru, and unfortunately he fell down, he had problems, he had a spiritual crisis, and he was drinking a little bit. So the devotees, they approach his disciples and they say, what's going on with your guru? What happened to him? Well, they said, it's because our Guru Maharaj, you know, he underwent a spiritual crisis, and he was going from the Baba stage to the Prema stage, and he had a little difficulty, so he just, to help himself, was drinking a little bit. Anyway, it's a joke. So we need coaching, and we need to apply the Bhagavatam practically, because we have practical needs. Give you an example of this. Sometime, because we are a movement that is beginning stage, Tomsø is like a little more in the beginning now. It's expanding to another stage. But I joined in the beginning stage. And in the beginning stage is like a pioneering stage. Like when we hear the word pioneer, we get an image in our mind, those who live in America, that the pioneers, they came from Europe to America by boat, whatever. And when they got to America, there was nothing there. It was just forest. And they had needs, but the facility for their needs were not there. So they had to produce the facility to fulfill their needs. So they started to cut the forest down and plow the land, and they carried seed from Europe, so they planted seed to get food. Then with the log, the trees, they made houses, and they had a residence, and they had food from their garden. That wasn't there before, but because they had the needs was there, they had to produce the facility to fulfill their needs. So you may find yourself in that situation, that you have some material needs and the facility is not there. So the example I want to give is in the early 1980s, right after Prabhupada left the movement, there was this crisis with the 11 Acharyas. We won't go into the detail. And there was like turmoil in our movement. And in Vancouver particularly, there was some setbacks. There was a nice gurukul there. And devotee had a devotee business, and they were making money, and things were thriving. But after the crisis, things fell apart, the business closed down, and the gurukul closed down. But still, there was devotees there. They had kids, and they had money, economic needs. So they were in the limbo. But at the same time, the ISKCON temple, just a couple of years before that, Vancouver ISKCON had bought a farm, a big farm, 2,000 acres in the Rocky Mountains, or a little before the Rocky Mountains, little smaller mountains, a valley in the mountain with two lakes, 8 kilometer long, 2 kilometer wide, and it was like totally secluded. There was no neighbors, just bears, deers, coyotes, rattlesnakes, whatever. So, but the devotees, the temple had bought the land, but they just put a down payment, and now the temple was going to give it up. You know, I have no more money to pay for it. They're giving up. They're going to lose it. So the devotees, they thought, individual devotees, no, let's just take it on. So some devotees who had big needs, big necessities, they said, this is an opportunity to expand ISKCON. ISKCON doesn't want it, we'll take it. So they took on their shoulder to pay make the payments. So finally they paid the whole farm. They were selling paintings and went to all kind of austerities to do that. And they bought the land, and they went there. They built their house. A few people built their house. And I moved there in 1992, 10 years later. So the land was already paid for. There's no mortgage. And there was about 20 houses. Now there's about 30, 40 houses there. Now there's a school there, the nice gurukul, nice temple, and people are living peacefully because they own their land, and they're devotees of ISKCON. They don't. The temple, where the temple is, and the land of the temple was donated to ISKCON and belongs to ISKCON. So we are ISKCON devotees, but the property is a corporation under a different name to safeguard any assault from fanatic leaders that may disturb your sadhana. Sometime happens. So you own your land for a grihastha. It's important to have not everybody. Some people are happy living in temples, and you have, but people who have big families and. They need maybe something else. So this is an example of how put the Bhagavatam philosophy into practical application, so it actually helps you. It helps you person, it's meant to help you. Bhagavatam is meant to help us. It's not like a theoretical understanding that has no connection with our practical lives, even our material lives. It's important. So, because if it were like all paramahansas, we can all live in temple, go preach every day, go on Harinam. No problem. Engage in pure devotional service, chant the 10th Hare Krishna all day. But we're conditioned souls. We come from the material world and we have strong attachments. Like, for example, it ties up with fulfilling the need to for fulfilling our material necessities. Material necessities are there because we have anarthas, because we have a lack of attachment for Krishna consciousness. It's not fully there. We have, sometimes we're apathetic, sometimes we're lethargic. Sometimes we have issues to work out. Sometimes they may be emotional, psychological issues to work out. And you need some space. You need your own space sometimes. If you're always asked to be in the front line every day of the battlefield of Krishna consciousness, you're always on emergency every day of the year, it's kind of hard on your nerves. Sometimes you need to retract a little bit and have a peaceful setting so you can rejuvenate your energy. So farm communities are like that. There's more option for devotees than beyond Harinam. And there's also Harinam on the farm. And there's also preaching program in Sharanagati. There's also book distribution going on. Harinam's going on. But you have like maybe, you can maybe be interested in cultivating the land or protecting cows or teaching in the Gurukul. There's so many, there's more options. So these options are there because you need maybe some coaches that will help you psychologically. For example, there's the idea of the word integrity. Some people use that word. People, you have integrity. Important to have integrity, you know. If you have no integrity, well, you know, you're like a loser. You're like a cheater, a liar, etc., etc. But in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, how much integrity can you have? Coming out of the material world with all your anarthas and desire for sense gratification, having done it for many years. Or you have integrity every day of the year? Not really, because the Madhurya Kadambini says that in the beginning stage of Krishna consciousness, there's an item of the inability to follow vows. You're unable to, even you want to, but you're not able to follow vows because you're not advanced enough to do it. To have full integrity, you must be a Goswami who never failed to control his senses every minute of the day. And if you read the Bhagavatam, there's plenty of histories in the Bhagavatam of people who fail to control their senses, and they're great devotees, like Indra and, you know, Ajamil, people that have material motive, like Dhruva Maharaj. He was motivated to get a kingdom as big as it was a material desire. But he's in the Bhagavatam. It's not like he's barfing, oh, he's material desire, I won't talk about him. No, it's there for our edification. So, to have integrity is difficult. You need to become purified. You need to gain control of your senses and your mind. And in the material world, when you have no spiritual guidance, you're out there with your parents are... I'm not talking for everybody. Some people may have not wonderful parents and you never had any problem. But many people, especially nowadays, they're lucky if they have both parents. They're lucky if they're part of a family that's dwindling. But sometimes the family is dysfunctional. The father is an alcoholic and the mom is crazy, whatever. And they have children and they don't get the proper emotional security to grow. And then when they go to school, there's bullying. There's assaults, physical assaults. There's exploitation, all that just goes on and on. Kali Yuga, that's what it is. So somebody facing all these things without guidance in youth, you'll have serious handicap. You will have serious handicap. And what happens also when somebody suffers all these problems, the first thing he's going to do is going to take shelter of sense gratification. He takes shelter of illicit sex, alcohol, cigarettes, intoxication. He'll take shelter of entertainment, video games, internet. Because when you enjoy, you forget your suffering. We know that. It's a cop-out. It's like a way to avoid our responsibility and problem, because people don't have the tools to accept their responsibility. They're dysfunctional. So when they come to, and they come to Krishna consciousness in this condition, you can understand it's going to take a while for the person to become healthy spiritually, emotionally. So that's why there's a great turnover in our temples, that not everybody that comes will stay. And the quality of our society, ISKCON, will be manifest when we can keep the devotees in. If we can keep the devotees in, it's a sign that we're helping them transcend their beginning spiritual life problems. So, therefore, sometimes you need an environment where there's coaches, where there's devotee care. Actually, in ILS, ISKCON Leadership Sangha, where there's like thousands of leaders all over the world, they ask the devotees, what major problem do you see in ISKCON? What is the major problem? So the major problem, number, there's three of them, but there's more, there's three of them that came up. The first major problem is a lack of devotee care. People feel they're not being taken care of properly. Lack of devotee care was the first one. Second one was guru groupies. There was second guru groupies, like devotees that are hanging on to their guru but become fanatic about their gurus and different things. The guru has disciples from different temples and they take them away for their project and they get their guru dakshin for their project and the temples become depleted of manpower because the guru groupie, they don't understand that Prabhupada wants him to stay in the temple, not just like follow the guru and give him all the money to the guru. You know, sometimes it happens. And the third one was they were afraid of that the transference of the legacy of ISKCON from Prabhupada disciples to the new generation of devotees will be defaulting. It will be like difficulty passing it on. It was the three major problems. But devotee care was one problem. So, in the practical application of the Bhagavatam, these things will come out. That's why there's many seminars on coaching, and devotees give lectures on all kinds of topics, social topics, economic topics. It's all part of spiritual development. It's all coming out of the Bhagavatam. So, I'll stop here. There's maybe 5 minutes more. I'm sorry if I talk so long. I had a lot on my consciousness, as you can see. So I'll leave some time for questions. Pancha Guru.
Hare Krishna. You know, how about Srimad Bhagavatam can apply to our lives and ourselves, and since we're all coming from complicated backgrounds, and maybe we should be careful not to overthink the complexity of the Bhagavatam. Just by reading Bhagavatam, staying in the association of devotees, chanting the holy name, I understand that there are special needs and certain things that we have to be conscientious of in managerial, social, and whatnot. But sometimes it goes a little beyond, and we lose the vision of Mangalarti, Tulsi Puja, Guru Puja chant. Go out and preach. Your householder, work, give everything to Krishna.
Yes.
So just be careful not to get a little too technical and trying to analyze, psychoanalyze the whole Bhagavatam application for our lives.
Yeah. That brings the other side also. The other side is not doing it, neglecting it. People in temples, they have the full program, But still, they have difficulties. I mean, I remember myself, I was a Sankirtan devotee. I was going to the full morning program, full on. I was first one to wake up from Mangalarti, first guy to get out the door when it's time to go on book distribution, last time to come back. All that, that was my program for years. Still, difficulties were there. And they were not addressed. Then, of course, eventually, it is by devotional service that we can get some psychological insight. Not just by some mundane psychology, somebody will all of a sudden become enlightened. You need Krishna's help, because Krishna says that I enlighten those who are devoted to me, worship them with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So, that is there. But sometimes you get to need a little kick. Sometimes you need a little help, a little coaching to help you get the realization that Krishna wants you to get. So there's the one extreme, there's two extremes. We must find the middle path. There must be some devotee care, must be there. But now that we forget devotee care, we become absorbed in all those other things. That's not what I meant. Because actually, one realization I had was that because I had a vegetarian lunch program in Vancouver, and I did it for 13 years, and that vegetarian lunch program was very demanding. It was like 80 hours of work a week, and sadhana on top of it. Like, I had to work so hard, and I had to work with full concentration of mind, because there was a lot of people were coming to the, there was two different vegetarian lunch programs at two different universities, and it was a lot of work. But I needed the money I needed the funds to take care of my family, and at the same time, that's a choice I'd made to make money by distributing prasadam to people. And also we'd go downtown, give the leftover to the homeless people. But what I realized after, it was so demanding, I required so much total absorption, that some of my defects and anarthas were forgotten by the intense absorption and devotional service. Like you said, let me try to solve these things personally. But if you become absorbed in devotional life, Krishna feels obliged, because it's an important service to help other people. And if that service is important, it will have some leverage on Krishna. Krishna will become attracted. And whatever is missing, some psychological insight or whatever it takes, Krishna will supply. But it came from devotion, you're right about that. That it came from the devotional effort of the devotee, not without that. But along with that, Krishna can still work also through psychology. Can you still work through that? Thank you. Maybe one last question.
Thank you very much.
Really? Okay.
And this, it's actually a little question. But my question is that, how do you look at the fact that one of the feelings that they just stay in the farm and lives goes by, you know? Sometimes when you stay in the woods, sometimes that feeling is that you're not doing anything for life to develop, you know? So if you come to the market, there are similar things.
Can you repeat, because the bell was ringing and I was ringing the bell.
Sometimes when the word is saying and the woods went up or on the farm, they have a feeling that my life is close by, I'm not doing really anything regular. So I don't travel like this. So how do you deal with that kind of feelings on your farm?
When you're in Sharanagati? How you don't feel like you're left out of the Sankirtan movement?
Even out of life, you know, like out of acting.
Out of preaching and... And you're not in a fire because you're in
yes.
the fun.
And sometimes not so many senior devotees are coming to you and you just stay kind of alone there.
Well, the senior devotees, they're not going to pay your bills, if you want to know that. They're not going to pay your bills. So if you have a family and you have kids, you have to take care of, that's part of Krishna, that's part of being in fire Krishna consciousness, to take your responsibility, pay for the bills, pay, supply the, what your children need, supply a gurukul, supply a temple, so they can become spiritually developed. Like my kids, I have five kids, they're all devotees, and they stay in Sharanagati. That's success. They all married devotees. They all, my daughter is part of Kirtan London. She's preaching. My son is the president of Sharanagati. My other daughter is a gurukul teacher. She's in charge of the school. It's all devotional service. And eventually, also people on the farm, they go out. They distribute books also. If you want to do that, you can do that. No big deal. So, you must take care of yourself. Nobody's going to take care of yourself. The sannyasi that comes around is not going to feed your family. It's not his responsibility. But if you're a grihastha, you must take your responsibility. If you renounce responsibility and you go become prematurely a sannyasi or a renunciate, and you're not fulfilling your duty, Krishna is not pleased. It's false renunciation. In due course of time, when you're truly able, okay, then it's time to move on. But not prematurely. So you must be intelligent, you know. You must, at the end of the day, you may hear so many classes, you may go to so many seminars, but you're going to have to make up your own mind about how you want to live. It's up to you. You're the one deciding. Okay, all glories to Shri Prabhupada.